Hello, this is Adam Virgo, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. Joining me for this show, we've got Dan Tracy.
Good evening.
And we've got Nick Davey.
Good evening.
You guys both well?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Yeah, just about recovered from Sunday's mauling for the Spurs, but apart from that, I'm fine, thanks.
We'll come on to Spurs in a bit, but the first thing I want to discuss on the show tonight is last night's Europa League final game. Liverpool went 1-0 up against Sevilla, but unfortunately ended up losing 3-1. Did either of you guys watch the game?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I did.
What did you make of the second half, the way Sevilla came back and, well, battered Liverpool in the second half after Liverpool were dominant in the first, I thought?
Fantastic team talk from the Sevilla manager.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference half-time makes. I'd love to know what was said in both dressing rooms, to be honest, because that was just an incredible turnaround.
It was a mental thing for Liverpool, though. What Jurgen Klopp was saying after the game, he said once that first goal went in, he knew, like, mentally, the whole team had just lost it.
Yeah, they just capitulated. I mean, people I was talking to last night, they were saying that I get the feeling that Liverpool can't sustain the way they're playing at the moment for 90 minutes. They seem to have a habit of having a great start in the first half, and they can't seem to carry that through after half-time. I remember the Southampton game when they were, 2-0 up at half-time and fell apart. It just seems to be a bit of a common trait for them at the moment. But just the way that the manner they conceded that goal after 16 seconds, it's just such a bad goal to concede. Moreno just either had to get it into touch or get it clattered himself. And the way he sort of just circled out from the tackle just pretty much sort of summed up Liverpool's performance in the second half, really. It was just really just sloppy, really. It was just, and like you say, the heads just went after that. It's just a terrible 45 minutes for them.
Yeah, I think with Liverpool, I think it could potentially be, though. I know it's obviously very frustrating not to win it, and obviously they want to be in the Champions League. But for next season, I reckon under Klopp, I reckon Liverpool will be title contenders, and more so than the fact they won't have any European distractions at all.
Well, this is the thing. Towards the latter part of the season, the last month or so, they've been playing a lot of youngsters in the Premier League and been putting all their eggs in one basket. Do you think the fact that there's no European football at all is a negative for Liverpool? I know you're saying it allows them to focus on the league and maybe potentially, as you say, be title contenders, but should Europe, is that not a loss for them?
I think it can work both ways, because the cynic in me thinks that Klopp's looked at those last few games in the Premier League and thought, do you know what? I can win the Europa League, so I'm going to pretty much sacrifice that.
Yeah.
And I'll go get the Champions League through the back door. But the problem they've got now is that Nick makes a great point that without European football, it freshens them up each week, similar to how Leicester were pretty much aided this season and Liverpool the season before when they weren't in Europe and finished second. But I think the problem they've got now is they're going to struggle to attract top-tier players in the summer, which would enhance their team to give them a real boost in the top four. They had a real opportunity to close the gap on the top four clubs this season by getting into the Champions League through the back door, and they've missed that opportunity now. So although Nick makes the point that less games could aid them in a challenge for the title, I think they more needed to win the Europa League to get better players, because I don't think they've got the players to mount the title challenge at the moment. So yeah, you can see both sides of the argument, but I think it's more detrimental than it is a positive.
Well, this is the thing with the Liverpool side. They're going to be signing players in the summer. They're going to refresh. Jurgen Klopp also said after the game that the team will be very different. I think you'd both agree with me in saying they could do with an upgrade on Moreno at left back. But other than that, what else do you think that side needs to challenge for, say, top four or Premier League title or whatever it is next season?
I think they probably need another big hitter up front, because I still feel they rely too much on Sturridge when he's not fit. Origi looks pretty good, but again, not someone that can win you a title, I'd say. I mean, in an ideal world, I'd love to probably just go and pinch Jamie Vardy from Leicester. But obviously, that's probably not going to happen. But, you know, you need that striker who's going to be consistent and score all the goals. I think Benteke's been a bit of a flop. There's no secret there. I suspect he'll probably be on his way. But, yeah, and then they'll probably have to go abroad. I think the Atletico striker would be a fantastic... Fantastic time.
What, Torres? Griezmann.
Griezmann.
Sorry,
no, I was actually struggling to find the name. I think they need someone like that, a world-class striker, I think. And I think also a bit like what we say at Arsenal time. I think they need a leader at centre back.
I also think they haven't really had
that since Danny Carragher.
Yeah, I also think their midfield. If you look at Milner, Can, Allen, Henderson, it's very functional. But I don't really think there's much sort of spark there, is there? So I think they need that needs livening up. I think
again, it's sort of relying on Coutinho again, isn't it? Just keep relying on that one player.
I think he's too much of a luxury, though. When he does great things, it's very impressive, but I think he goes missing in too many games at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
I think Sterling was replaced, in my opinion. Then we had that a winger sort of thing who can take his fullback on. They haven't really got that. I know they've got Jordan Ibe, but I think they could do another winger, really. I think someone like Yannick Bolasie wouldn't be a bad sign for Liverpool.
Yeah. Could you see Klopp going back to Dortmund and raiding his old club for any players?
Yeah, I think he'll probably get a few.
Do you think he'll actually succeed?
He's going to try.
But
I think not winning the Europa League and therefore not getting any European football has hampered that, because I think had they won last night, you could have maybe fought Mario Götze. I know it's not going back to Dortmund, but there's still that link. Mm-hmm. That he could have been a decent move for Liverpool, but I think that's... The Liverpool are going to be down the pecking order now if he does move in the summer, simply for the fact they can't offer European football. So,
well, chances
are, he could go and get from Dortmund now, because I can't really see someone like
Royce or someone.
No, I just can't see it. Unfortunately, I don't know who they get in the summer. Really, like I'd say, their targets are going to have to be scaled down after last night's defeat. But as to who, I wouldn't really know.
I just want to go on to the other side of the coin with Sevilla winning. That's the third season in a row they've won the Europa League, which is a pretty fantastic record for them. Their manager, Unai Emery, I think tactically, I know he's got a very good reputation in Spain, and I thought last night he seemed to get his tactics spot on. Like, we've sort of alluded to it already, but like when Liverpool tried to press in the first half, they were playing long balls to avoid all that, and the way they came out in the second half, I think it was a great managerial performance, great tactical performance from Sevilla.
Yeah, I think he outclassed Klopp, to be honest, and Klopp's not beaten that often on the touchline by a rival manager, so for Unai Emery to mastermind the third successive Europa League title, he'd done incredibly well last night. I thought the way he overhauled the game in the second half, it wasn't just Liverpool's capitulation, it obviously had a lot to do with where Sevilla was set out after the break as well. So I think full credit must go to him.
Another thing, though, that leads on to is the Spanish teams have really dominated recently. They've won, obviously, the last three Europa Leagues, but the last three Champions League, it's Real Madrid Atletico this season in the final. Last season, it was Barcelona who won it. The season before that, Real Madrid Atletico. It's a real Spanish domination at the moment in that aspect.
Yeah, they're obviously doing something right there, aren't they?
The thing is, well, with the coefficient, I know they've been really going up. But the other thing I want to go on to is the Spanish national team, because a couple of Premier League players, Diego Costa and Juan Mata, weren't in their national team. They've not been picked for the Euros, which... do you guys agree with that? Or
I don't get why Mata's not in the team.
It's a difficult one because...
Both of them, really. Costa, I mean, I thought he was their leading striker.
I think with Costa, it's the fact that he's got a recurrence of the injury that saw him play very little in the 2014 Champions League final for Atletico. And then off the back of that, he was very ineffectual for Spain in the World Cup in Brazil the following month. So I think De Bosque's not prepared to have a repeat of that. So he's taken the sort of liberty of leaving him at home because he feels he's got enough strikers to sort of warrant him staying in London. So I think that's the reason behind that. I think you can make a case that he's had a solid season. It's not really been spectacular, but again, I think there's Spain always fought for riches in that area of the pitch. So harsh, perhaps, but not a massive surprise either.
Well, that's the thing with Spain's attacking midfield. You've got similar players to Mata. You've got Iniesta, Silva. You've got Fabregas on the side. You've got Isco. You've got Koke as well of Atletico Madrid. There's plenty of other players. With the strikers, though, I think Costa, it's a strange one because you've got your Morata of Juve in the squad, and then you've got Ajeriz and Nolito who have had good seasons, but in general, I guess, you wouldn't consider them as good a player as Costa, so I guess it's the form against class, you know, the reputation argument with the striker issue.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, if anything, it's more harsh than Fernando Torres, because I thought he was going to make a late push for the squad, to be honest. The form he's been in, certainly in the last few months, he looked more likely out of the two. So I think, if anything, he'll be more disappointed. But again, I think he hasn't quite sort of done enough over the course of the season to warrant it. But sometimes you need to pick players who hit form at the right time, like this time of the season, don't you? So,
yeah,
an interesting choice by Del Bosque. I think someone else like Santi Cazorla, I think there's no real surprise he didn't make the squad either.
There's no surprise there.
Well, the other player I want to mention, Saul Niguez, who scored that goal against Bayern Munich in the semi-final. He scored that spectacular goal. And Lucas Vasquez, who's finally starting to make his name at Real Madrid, they're both in the squad and they've not played for Spain yet. So it's an interesting Spanish squad. I don't know how you expect them to do at the Euros. They've sort of been, in the bookies, shunted aside a bit in favour of other teams like France and Germany.
Yeah, I think they're, third favourites at the moment? Yeah. And I think that's about right, to be honest, because Spain's golden era, as we knew it from 2008 to 2012, that's gone now, isn't it? I think the World Cup showed us that cycle's come to an end. So it's a case of trying to into the fold and get the team back up to that level. And I don't think it's going to come this summer. I think the way they sort of have a constant cycle of players, it won't be perhaps too far away. But I think semi-final is about right.
Okay. Let's move on to the final day of the Premier League season then. We'll start with the Spurs-Newcastle game. Spurs obviously lost 5-1 to Newcastle, who were already relegated. Newcastle went down to 10 men, but managed to score more goals and won the game. What did you make of it, Dan?
Just bizarre. A really bizarre result. I mean, no one saw that one coming, not even Newcastle fans, because, let's be honest, Newcastle relegated, you would have thought they've got nothing to play for, and also you would have expected quite a toxic atmosphere at St James's Park, because usually with Newcastle fans, they like to protest at anything, but it was like a celebration of sorts, wasn't it? The way they're trying to cajole Rafa Benitez into staying, and like, it was really like warm atmosphere, and Newcastle fed off that, and Spurs have just been mentally shot since that draw with West Brom. Mm-hmm. It's like as if the season finished that night, and they've just collapsed. It didn't help not having Dele Alli, Moussa Dembele not playing, as I touched on last week, that those who don't play, Spurs are a completely different team. Ryan Mason was just overrun. It just, I don't know, like I say, it's taken the shine off of an incredibly good season, and now that's going to be the thing that's remembered for the next couple of months, and it's ended the season on a sour note, unfortunately. It's glossed over what should be remembered as a good season, but unfortunately that's not the case now.
How big a problem do you think it'll be going into the next season, you know, with the poor form now? Like, mentally, do you think that's going to play on the players' minds? And you know, or do you think it would be possibly a good thing where the players want to come out fighting at the start of next season, thinking we want to put all this to bed and start off well?
I think they're going to have to start quickly. I think any sort of credit in the bank is gone now, because that was quite an embarrassing defeat, really. So if they don't start well, that is going to become more and more of an issue. If they can start the season well, get a couple wins under their belt, it's forgotten about, and then we start again, and it's, you know, it's just a blip, and then who knows what will happen the season after. But they have to be careful. I think it was quite telling the way Pochettino said in his post-match interview that, in his words, he's got important information about who he wants to sort of keep and sell and buy in the summer. In terms of, I think that performance may have sort of killed off a couple of players' career, namely like Ryan Mason. I think will certainly be one who won't be staying around. So
it's almost like the opposite of Leicester, aren't they? Finished the previous season and started the next season.
Yeah, that's right. Bizarre, absolutely bizarre, is all I can say. And, you know, not even touching on the Arsenal factor, again, we finished below Arsenal, so that becomes more of a mental block. It doesn't matter quite as much, say, if we had dropped out of the Champions League places on the last day. It doesn't change all that much, because all we've lost is second place, and fourth, and then we're back in the Europa League again. So that still is an ongoing factor. We could have put it to bed, and then that's a non-issue, because it's done, and it's hoodoo is finally sort of broken. But again, we're going to next season, it's all about trying to beat Arsenal and get above them. So another opportunity spurn there. So,
well, that was the next thing, because Pochettino said it was maybe a week or two before the end of the season that he didn't want to be thinking about finishing ahead of Arsenal, because it was a small club mentality sort of way to think. You should, as a club, you should be thinking you want to finish as high in the table as possible. Do you buy that?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think they thought about it too much. To get 2 points out of 12 in the last four games, and bar Chelsea, the other three were winnable. And then even the Chelsea game, those first three games out of that four, they were in front. So there is a mental block, and they just can't seem to get over the line. I think they're too focused on getting second, getting above Arsenal. Once the disappointment of losing the title, well, not losing the title, but not being able to win the title because Leicester had already wrapped up. They should have just focused on the job in hand, got the points they needed. But I think it was just that sort of elephant in the room, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Nick, have you got any thoughts on what's happened with Spurs?
Yeah, as I say, I think it's all gone to pot really since the collapse at Stamford Bridge. I'm hoping, because I think they've done so well this season, and as I said, it's all to be remembered for them, for them ending below Arsenal, which is a shame. They've had a great season. They've got Champions League football to look forward to next season. So I think, as I say, yeah, I think Pochettino, he'll know what to do. Sort of remove some of the deadwood, so to speak, over the summer, bring in some fresh faces. I think they probably still need a new striker to give Harry Kane that bit of competition up front. They can get that in, and then maybe another centre mid in.
Obviously, it was a great win for Newcastle, and it's looking up for them because it looks like Rafael Benitez may stay at the club. It's not confirmed yet, but if he stays and agrees to manage in the Championship, it'd be, well, fantastic news for them and probably give them the best chance of going straight back up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they keep Benitez probably a very bold statement, but I think I reckon they'll win the league, and not only win the league, I reckon they'll probably go the whole year unbeaten. I reckon they'll go the whole season unbeaten. Mm-hmm. I really think that Benitez in the Championship, I think he'll get a squad in place that will smash the league apart. I reckon, yeah, if they can keep him, if they keep Benitez, they'll be sending out the ground every week. I reckon they'll certainly have no problems coming back up.
Do you think they could break that record they made a couple of years ago, though? What was it? Was it 100-odd points they got?
I reckon so. I mean, one thing they will need to do, and they can need to copy from last time they went down the Championship. When they went down the Championship, they did have players like Andy Carroll up front, Joey Barton, Kevin Nolan in centre-mid, players who know the Championship, and so like players who are going to fight for every ball in the Championship. And that's exactly what you need in the Championship, week in, week out. But Benitez will know that, and he'll know what we're doing. They're already linked with players like Lee Tomlin. They're linked with he'll be a good signing. Players like that.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think Newcastle will be able to keep hold of, though, as well as of all their big players? Do you think they'll be able to keep the likes of Ayoze, Perez, Sissoko, Wijnaldum?
Well, which football clubs in the Premier League? Although you might get a few clubs abroad, but in the Premier League, who's really going to jump out of their seat and want to really pinch those players? Really. One line of them I can understand, yeah, you can get the few clubs that come on, because he's proven in some games how class he was. But other players, I mean, Perez, I wouldn't, if I was a Premier League club, I wouldn't want to touch him. Sissoko seems he's got a bit of attitude problems. But it's just that they go abroad or not, really.
What about Andros Townsend? Could you see him staying? Because I read in the week he's only got an £8 million release fee. Clause. So, could you see someone activating that in the Premiership?
I think clubs would be fools not to in the Premier League. I reckon he's proven he's got goals in him. Whether not a bit to do with the teams sort of from top and above, but certainly I think even if someone like Swansea, I think it'd be perfect for them.
Would you see him back at Spurs, maybe?
No, I think unfortunately he didn't burn his bridges, but I don't think him and Pochettino are on the best of terms. So unfortunately, I don't think he'll be coming back to White Hart Lane anytime soon.
Yeah. Just want to move on to another club who's been relegated, Aston Villa. They've been bought by Dr. Tony Hsia, a Chinese businessman. There's two aspects to this story, I suppose. I suppose the first is we'll talk about Villa themselves. He said there'll be a £50 million budget for the new Villa manager. So, again, that could help them really rebuild the side and get, you know, compete for the maybe winning the Championship as well with Newcastle.
Yeah, I think Villa, again, they're going to need to have a lot of good signs, players who know the Championship inside out. But with Villa, they had a chance really to really prepare. They could have got a new manager really prepared it for next season. I mean, they might have done this behind the scenes, which they haven't done. But I mean, they need to make a quick snap appointment, because it's going to be a very busy summer for whoever takes over. Don't get me wrong. They could be in danger of doing something like a Fulham and struggle next year if they don't get this sorted out quickly. So I think they've already got this takeover sorted. That's a good start. But if they want to get, I don't know who's favourite for the job at the moment. Pearson's still favourite. I mean, he'd be a perfect manager for them if they can get him in, and then if he can start obviously rebuilding, then the sooner the better, really, for the
I think them being bought is almost a bit of a lifeline for them, because we've said many times, and Nick's alluded to it there, that they could even sort of go down straight to League One. But I think now they've got that injection of money, that probably won't happen. But I think they have to spend this money wisely, because they're not going to get the bundle of money again. So what they do with the $50 million over the summer is going to be quite telling. And if they can spend it wisely, and also they're going to have to have a massive sort of overhaul, aren't they? So they might even have to sort of use that money to buy out players, let alone sort of buy players in. So the squad would probably be unrecognisable from what we know and what we've seen this season. But yeah, it's going to be an incredibly important summer, not just on the pitch, but in the background as well, because you know, you've got board members leaving sort of week by week at the moment. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of change, a lot of overhaul at Villa Park over the summer.
Just on, Nick mentioned in passing the next manager odds, it's Roberto Di Matteo is like the big odds on favourite. I think he's 1-3 on
that. Di Matteo, I forgot about that.
He could be a great appointment for Villa, and then after that Nigel Pearson's the second favourite, and then after that everyone's massive odds, so be one of those two if they're booking up bookies odds is anything to go by.
Ireland should be a fantastic appointment.
I think Di Matteo is sort of almost part of the deal, that purchase comes first and then he'll be installed as part of the deal in a week or so's time, so I think he's obviously odds on for a reason. I think out of the two, I think Pearson would be the better choice. I know Di Matteo won a Champions League title, but sort of how much did him being the manager did won it for Chelsea? I think that was almost sort of player power got him over the line that season after he took over, but I don't know. He's never, where else did he manage? MK Dons and West Brom? He never really sort of pulled up any trees, did he?
I thought it was quality at both clubs. Leicester, MK Dons got them high in League One before he was pinched by West Brom, got them promoted. And he was in a good position in the Premiership at West Brom, and for some reason sacked. But West Brom do seem to make strange sackings. I mean, him and Steve Clark both sprung to mind that they harshly lost their jobs in the past. And then you've got obviously Chelsea, who won the Champions League for crying out loud. So I think he's been a very good manager wherever he's got. I think he'll be a quality appointment for Villa. But whether Pearson could be the better one because he's got a bit more experience in the Championship. But I think either of them will be absolutely fantastic.
I guess the other point to make about it is the fact it's a Chinese owner, and it shows the increasing amount of power over world football the Chinese are starting to get.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I know, just another sort of foreign owner of an English club. Don't want to get sort of too xenophobic or anything like that, no. But it's where the money is, isn't it? So I don't think Villa are in a position to sort of turn away something like that at the moment. So I think it is what it is, to be honest. There's nothing too much you can make of it.
No. A couple of other games on the final day of the season. Southampton beat Palace 4-1 to beat West Ham to sixth place in the league, and they'll be playing in Europe next season for sure. Great result for them. It's been a great season overall. It's a shame Shane's not on.
I was going to say, Leicester just dominate all of the teams that have done well. But if it was just a normal, say, City or Arsenal or whoever won the league, I think Southampton would be talked, would be spoken a lot to. I mean, they've done fantastic this year. And Ronald Koeman, the job he's done at Southampton, really is brilliant. And I think he'd be perfect for someone like Arsenal, Ronald Koeman. I think he's done a sensational job at Southampton. Given the fact that they weren't doing too well before Christmas as well, which was that win against Arsenal on Boxing Day, and so a sixth place finish is fantastic, and so they've got European football to look forward to, and again, he always seems to recruit well there. I mean, they just seem they all seem to handle their sales very well in the market. If they lose players, they've always replaced perfectly well, and so yeah, I think they'll be a credit to it in the Europa League next year.
Yeah, I think the key was getting 16 points out of the last 18. Great strong finish to get them up to six. Also, in the summer, the key will be for them just holding on to the players, because I don't think they're going to want to go through another rebuilding job, are they? Although Coombe did a great job in the summer of rebuilding a squad that had lost so many key players to mainly Liverpool, though. So they have to sort of make sure that's not a regular occurrence each year, because I don't think Coombe will be prepared to stay much longer. In fact, it's going to keep happening. I think the board have to match the ambition and try and at least have a go at sort of getting the top four. I mean, they've got a half-decent chance, as we've sort of seen this season, that it's blown wide open now. So I think they certainly need to sustain where they are, and I think they're only going to really do that if they can hold on to their key players. So it's going to be an important summer for Southampton as well, I think.
I think with Southampton, though, it might be different this season because Sadio Mane may go for silly money. He's been linked with Man United and other clubs, but the money's crazy. But other than that, there's not really... I don't think there's many players in that squad where you think they're an absolute standout player, which all the big clubs will go for. I think as a team, they're solid, and I think that'll help them in holding on to their players. I think the only one who might lose is Mane.
I think Victor Wanyama might be another one who could go because he's sort of gone on record that he would like to play for in the Champions League, and I could see him sort of leaving in the summer. But yeah, you're right, apart from sort of Mane, and the price of being bandaged for that, I think they'd be silly not to turn down if an offer come in, because it's a bit too streaky for my liking. He'll get a hat-trick against Liverpool and show how good he really is, but doesn't really do it enough for me. Sort of like fits and starts with Mane. Get a hat-trick one game, goes on a drought, and then looks impressive in 6 games later. So I think they wouldn't be too...
No.
It's great talent. I think the money they could be offered, I think they might as well cash in and see what they can get with the Mane money.
No, I agree with you. On his day, he's completely unplayable, but it's just not his day often enough, really.
That's right, yeah.
I guess the final game to talk about is is City drawing 1-1 with Swansea, which has secured them that fourth spot, which they needed. Obviously a big result for them, but City didn't look convincing at all on the day.
No, they didn't. I watched this one in full after the bombs get at Old Trafford. I didn't really have a choice, but they started well with obviously the early goal, but it just looked really tepid. Like they sort of got the goal and thought, well, it's almost enough. And once Ayew got the equaliser just for half time, it almost had the feeling of like a testimonial second half. City were really, really lukewarm, and they didn't have any real cutting edge, and they were very content to play for the point that they needed. Once they got that, they just sort of strolled to the final whistle. It's also been sort of symptomatic of their season, really. They just sort of never quite been good enough, have they? Just like a bit of a lethargy in the team, and
it was a very underwhelming game, wasn't it? That second half especially, it was just boring.
Yeah.
Do you think, because the manager Pellegrini's admitted it now, that he thinks maybe the Guardiola announcement had some impact, do you think that affected the players and made them maybe, I don't know, less willing to play for the manager?
It must have had some effect. I think it just naturally does. It's like anything, if you're, if you work in an office, if you knew your boss wasn't in on a certain day, you'd think, right, I'm only going to give 50-60% today. You just do, you naturally drop off. So we sort of extrapolate that to on the football pitch.
Yeah.
In the back of your mind, you've got to be thinking, well, he's not here, so why have I got to really pull my finger out for the next few months? My wages are secure. I'm not really going anywhere for a few months, so it doesn't really matter what I do between now and the end of the season. I think players do have a tendency just to down tools, really, don't they?
I know exactly. Go on.
No, sorry.
I was just going to say, I know exactly what you mean. However, my boss listens to this podcast, so I just want to say that I put in 100% every shift I do, whether he's in or not, or whether he's planning on retiring or leaving or not. we'll move on to Man United finally then. Obviously, they didn't play on the Sunday as they were supposed to with the bomb scare, the bomb being found in the toilets on the back of a door in one of the cubicles.
Stupidity, wasn't it, really? Just the fact that it was a training exercise and they left the decoy bomb behind.
Yeah, it was a security company. A security company were rented out a section of Old Trafford to do an exercise, and then they left one of the bombs behind on the back of the toilet cubicle door.
That's a very costly mistake, isn't it?
Oh yeah, $3 million, because the club in a goodwill gesture gave refunds on all the tickets and allowed free entry for the Tuesday night game. So I went down to the Tuesday night. I didn't have much hope for that 19-0 win required to get fourth spot. I guess they won, and Van Gaal made a speech at the end of the game. He got some boos, and I'm not sure if he'll still be at the club next season. Do you guys think he will be, or?
No, I don't think he will be. I think getting fourth spot. I mean, even if they got fourth spot, I don't think it's not enough, really, just given the football they've been playing. And who celebrates getting fourth unless you're Arsenal, to be honest with you, of a club that size. If they win the FA Cup, it's nice. It'll be, obviously, everyone loves winning the FA Cup, and it'll be a almost a thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, I completely agree with Nick. Unfortunately, fifth isn't going to be enough for Van Gaal now. Had he got fourth, then maybe there's a chance he sees out his contract, but I think the FA Cup, it will be like a leaving present if they do win it, and if they don't, then it makes his job even more untenable. So I think, yeah, we'll be seeing his last game on Saturday.
Okay. I'm genuinely unsure myself as a United fan. I'm not sure whether, well, I want him gone or he will be gone. I'm genuinely unsure. So we'll see what happens. So the FA Cup finals this weekend on Saturday. How do you guys see it going? Can you see United with, well, Van Gaal, if you like, signing off with a win?
Nick, do you want to go first?
Well, I think I want Man United to win. I sadly think Palace are going to do it. I don't want it to happen. I just think it will.
I think United will win. I think they're certainly going to the game favourites, but in any final, you know, both teams are there for a reason. They're not there by accident. So Palace have got as good a chance as United going into the game, but I think this one will go with the form book.
Okay. I also think United will win. I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll be a lot closer than people think, but I think United will just about shade it. The other big final on Saturday, which is probably going to be a bit more difficult to call, is the Champions League final, which is between Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid. How do we see that going?
I think it'll be Munich win.
Munich aren't playing.
Sorry, I don't know why I said Munich. I meant Real Madrid win. I really don't know why I said Munich. Yeah.
I think it'll be Real Madrid as well. I don't think Atletico are going to be able to exact revenge for 2 years ago, and I think Real Madrid will win their 11th European Cup or Champions League. So it'll be an end of a good first season for Zinedine Zidane.
I think Atletico have got a good chance, though. I mean, they've been written off. They've beaten Barcelona and Bayern Munich, which, you know, the two of the big three, really. And it's an incredible run they've gone on. And I think Atletico can do it. I think they defend incredibly well. And it's so entertaining to watch a final on the counter-attack. They're absolutely brutal to the, you know, to the opposing teams. I can see them really doing a job on Real Madrid.
I hope they do. Rather than win it than Real Madrid, but I just think Real Madrid will get this one. But it should make for a very good final, because Madrid derbies, they're certainly not boring, are they? So we should be in for a good one.
We're watching Spanish teams play as well, like, you know, trying to get the referee onside and all the play acting and that. It's not, it's maybe not pretty to watch, but it certainly makes for a good show, and it's entertaining and passionate.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for the purists, is it? But if you, for example, like El Clasico a couple of months ago, it was just drama, wasn't it? Like, just pure theatrics from Pepe and players like that. So, like I say, it's certainly entertaining, but if you're not a fan of continental football and a lot of falling over, then you'd probably be tearing your hair out, wouldn't you? But yeah, for me, I think it's all part of the game, isn't it? It's all the sort of grandstanding that comes with it.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to our final topic tonight. The England Euros squad has been announced. I'm sure we'll do a show nearer to the start of the Euros previewing it, but we'll talk a bit about England. I guess the biggest maybe surprise is Marcus Rashford making the initial squad despite Van Gaal and Roy Hodgson and others saying it shouldn't happen and it won't happen. But now he's in the squad. His form's been fantastic, and I think he deserves the place.
Yeah, I mean, his form certainly warrants a place. It still caught many people by surprise, though. I think, as you mentioned, a lot of people are under the impression that it's not going to happen, and people went on record saying that he's staying behind. The big question now is he in that 26 squad just to give him experience being in an international setup, or does he go the full way? If he does go, you'd hope he then also plays for England, because you don't really necessarily want a repeat of the Theo Walcott situation 10 years ago, where that took everyone by surprise and he just didn't feature at all in the whole tournament, and it sort of almost asked the question of why did he bother going in the first place. So you'd almost hope that if he does go to France, that he then is allowed to make an impact and show how good he really is.
The thing is, do you think going to a tournament and not playing a game, because I can see that being a benefit to the player, whether they play or not. Obviously, you know, obviously it's disappointing they've not got any minutes, but, you know, to be in the whole tournament atmosphere, you know, experience with the squad, I could see that being a great benefit to a player.
I suppose, yeah, of course it's a benefit to a player, but when you've only got 23 players to choose from, you don't really want someone who's just sort of along for the ride. You want to try and utilise every player you've got, because you've only got a finite amount of players to choose from, so especially up front, you've probably only got four, perhaps five strikers at the most. So You don't really want someone coming along for a free ride.
Well, if we take it as a given that the, you know, three strikers, Vardy, Rooney and Kane, will all be in the side, I don't think anyone's going to question that. Does that, you know, is Sturridge also a given to be in the side? And then does that mean with the four strikers already, Rashford can't make it?
I don't think Sturridge is necessarily a given, because if Rashford, for example, I don't know how many friendlies he's in line to play between now and the tournament, but if there's enough, if he plays well and there's enough clamour for him to be on the plane, then you think, well, hang on, Sturridge is probably the one most at risk. Then again, they could go for five strikers, so I don't think it's particularly set in stone for Sturridge just yet. It also depends on what breakup of the 23 is sort of split between defensive midfielders and attackers, so there's certainly some questions for Roy Hodgson to answer.
The thing,
I'm glad it's not me, to be honest.
Do you think Jermaine Defoe should have made the squad? Because there was a lot of talk on Twitter and on the forum as well that Jermaine Defoe should be there, but he's obviously not made it despite his good form towards the end of the season.
What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I love always like Defoe, and I always thought it'd be a nice option to come to bench. One player I was more glad was Andy Carroll, because I think he just offered something completely different. Rather than, I mean, if like we are 1-0 down or whatever in a game, 15 minutes, you can bring Andy Carroll to bring and just ping along balls, and he really is that old. He really can just, he's, I don't know, to myth said, oh, he'll ping long balls and striker, but if you get him right, he is that good in the air that he really can do the knock-ons and just cause havoc in that area. So it's Andy Carroll I'm more disappointed about, but yeah, Defoe's got probably got a case. I'd have probably rather done Defoe or Rashford, if I'm honest. No disrespect to Rashford, but I just think Defoe's got a bit more experience.
But then, do you think it's a question of yeah, Defoe is, I reckon today with Defoe's experience is a better option, you know, if it was today, but then, you know, with Rashford having over a long term career, is he maybe the more intelligent option to pick if he's your fifth choice striker?
I just think Rashford, I don't want to like do what we did with Walcott in 2006, take him just for the sake of it and then not play him or anything like that. I just think it'll be better if we just accept that it's too soon for him, and simply didn't need to go, and then we can just start, sort of, he can probably start again, and then you've got qualifiers in September, he can probably be involved with them.
I think the thing you have to remember is that if Danny Welbeck wasn't injured, I don't think even Rashford would be getting close to the squad, and I think because of that, you sort of, Jermaine Defoe isn't really like a direct swap for Danny Welbeck. Welbeck can offer you sort of wide play as well, whereas Defoe is strictly a goal getter in the box, so I don't think it's like a like-for-like replacement. So I think Defoe's only sort of in the pecking order because Welbeck's fallen out of the list. So it's almost, he was never really in the line-up to start with, I don't think.
The other thing, Jack Wilshere and Jordan Henderson have both made the squad despite both of them having, well, not doing a lot this season, having their seasons wrecked by injury. Do you think they both should be in the squad?
Well, I think it's just down to Hodgson picking his favourite, so to speak.
But then, do you think with, say, Wilshere in particular, I know in an England shirt, he's generally been pretty impressive. I guess it's going back to a previous point when we were talking about, you know, the form versus class debate. Would you have picked them two players in there?
I've done Henderson, but not Wilshere.
I personally would have gone the other way round. As much as it pains me to say it, I don't really like Jack Wilshere as a Arsenal player, but like you touched on, Anthony, that he's very, very good in England shirt. I mean, he won the last 8 games that he's played or something, so I think that gets him a pass for me. Whereas Henderson, he's still got to prove he's sort of fully fit. And then I think personally it's probably a toss-up between Henderson and Drinkwater for the last centre midfield berth. Wilshere, yes for me, but Henderson I'd leave behind.
Sorry, so to clarify, what would be your centre mid combination?
Trying to think. Well, the three players I'd leave behind would be Delph. Henderson on the basis that, let's just say, he's not 100% fit, so I'd leave him behind. And then it would be a toss-up between Andros Townsend and Marcus and Rashford. So, and I probably would leave Rashford behind just to give him the experience of being in a set-up. So I still think Townsend's probably the player nearer to Danny Welbeck because he can give you something a bit like a wider sort of pace as well. So, yeah, they'd be the three I'd leave behind.
I do agree it's something the squad is lacking other than Townsend, that pace on the wings. I mean, they've got Sterling and Townsend, the two proper out-and-out wingers in the squad. But other than that, maybe James Milner as well, but I think he's more likely to end up playing a central role for England. So, yeah, I think Townsend, for me, has to be in the final squad.
I'd have got Antonio as well.
Not a bad shout, but I certainly think Townsend would be above him in the pecking order. You certainly can play Antonio right back for England because I think defensively he's still a bit iffy. He does well going forward, but he's been caught out a few times when he plays right back. So I don't think it's, yeah, it's no real surprise that he hasn't made the cut, but it's certainly ended the season well. So you'd think going forward into the qualifiers for the World Cup that if he continues that form, there's no reason why he couldn't make a future squad.
Just one final question. Do you think we can compete with the with the big boys at the Euros? Do you think we can do well this summer?
Yeah, we're going to win the whole thing.
I'm not that confident, but I'm hopeful of a good Euros, maybe a semi-final.
What? Just because we're a little country? I mean, we're giving football to the world and we're going to go and take it back.
I admire Nick's optimism, but I agree with you, Anthony. I think semi-finals would be a great achievement this summer. The bookies have us at 4 favourites, which is probably slightly tempered by the fact that a lot of English people always bet on England, don't they? So that sort of lowers the odds. But yeah, I think semi-final we can get to. We can certainly compete with any other nation. I think it's only really France and Germany that are cut above the rest, and everything else is sort of a bit of a much of a much this, really. I think we're no worse than Spain, Italy, Portugal, we're probably better than. So yeah, bring it on. Semi-finals or better, I say.
It'd be interesting.
You don't need to liven up a bit. Think about all the people England have raised. William Shakespeare, David Beckham, Michael Owen, Her Majesty the Queen, Prince William. Come on, we can do it. We've just got to be a bit more faith. What else have we done? We've also got Philip Schofield.
Nice from New Zealand.
Piers Morgan. Actually, you're probably right.
Is that a genuine prediction or?
My prediction is we're going to win the whole thing.
Okay. Well, if we do, you can say I told you so and quite proudly say it too. I think we've reached the end of the show unless there's anything else anyone wants to mention or discuss or anything.
Quick one on John Terry.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. So John Terry signed a 1-year deal at Chelsea, I suppose. Do you think it's a good thing for Chelsea and for the player himself?
Yeah, I think Premier League still.
Yeah, I think it's good for both parties, really, isn't it? He never really wanted to go. I think he couldn't move to the MLS because they had no designated player slots left, and I don't think he was ready for sort of almost semi-retirement in China or Qatar. And the fact that he never was going to play for another Premier League club, so it's almost a case of he had nowhere else to go. And I think Chelsea sort of didn't want to buckle. They didn't want to sort of get rid of Terry after such a miserable season, because I think that would have annoyed the fans even more. So I think the olive branch of that sort of lesser contract has suited everyone, and I think everyone's happy, aren't they?
How much of an impact do you think Conte made with John Terry staying? Do you think it was his call or?
Yeah, it's an interesting point actually. I think Hiddink might have had a word and said, "Look, you can't let him go," and I think Conte would have had some input as well. So there has certainly been some talk in the background, wouldn't there, from the higher ups at Chelsea. So I don't think it would have been Terry alone that said, "Look, please, well, not please, can I stay?" But you know, I'm willing to stay and I'm ready to sign a new contract. So I think there's been a bit of give and take from both sides, and I think like I say, everyone's got the outcome that they wanted.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of the show. There's a few things I want to say. There's an interview up with KV Patterson, which Chris Lappin's conducted from Disability Football UK. I'd really recommend listening to that. It's a great interview. Take a listen to that. We've got a few future upcoming interviews, and we've also got the 72 show. We've got the final couple of episodes. We're doing a season review. We're going to be looking at this new proposal where we could see 80 teams in the Football League in 4 divisions. It's an interesting proposal. We're going to discuss that in depth, I'm sure. And we've got the playoff final previews. You can also vote in the 72 Show Awards on Twitter or on the forum. Thanks for listening to the show. Night.
Good night.
Good night.